You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of July 15th, 2020. And we're back in Midgar. Again?
Welcome back, everybody. This is the Experience Points podcast. My name is Scott Juster.
I am George Albor.
We are the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net. It is a serious but not humorless conversation about video games. And we did it. As George said, we went back to Midgar, to the Mako reactors.
Oh, see, you should have introduced the episode.
We are going to talk about Final Fantasy VII Remake. We're going to do a debrief. We are going to talk about the game design first, and then we're going to get into the specific story of Final Fantasy VII Remake.
Yes.
And we're going to give people a big warning for spoilers, because we're going to talk specifically about the plot and where it goes from there. And this game was a long time coming, and I remember both of us essentially dreading this game.
Yes, because we did a debrief on the original Final Fantasy VII in preparation. All of you guys can go back and listen to that if you'd like. I think we did, what, like 3, 4, 5 episodes?
It was multiple episodes over, you know, something that turned out to be, what, there's like 50, 60 hours of that game, and there's, what, 30 hours of this game? So the pacing is pretty astounding.
Right. And our thoughts generally was that, hey, this is surprisingly mediocre. You know, all of the work that, all of the world building that happened in Final Fantasy VII, I did that. And it wasn't in the game.
Yeah.
I do believe that I said on the record, I thought this game would not be good. I thought Final Fantasy VII Remake would suck.
Yeah, I think both of us were pretty skeptical of what would happen with this game.
And especially knowing that they broke up the game into pieces, right? They announced well after the game was announced, they unveiled that they were actually chopping this game up. I don't believe they... Have they said how many episodes?
I don't think they've announced the final... I don't even know if they know.
Yeah. Oh, we'll talk about that too then, I guess.
Yeah.
They announced that it would be broken up and that this first section would mostly be focused on Midgar. Now, that is the best section of the original video game.
Oh, yeah. I think we were very impressed. I remember, if you go back to those episodes, we were essentially gushing about the opening hours of this game, of like how fast it is. It just dumps you into the action. You immediately know these characters. You're quickly understanding the stakes of the world. Everything seems grounded but also fantastical at the same time. I mean, it's just a strong section of the game. It's like, I don't know what it is, 5 or 10 hours of the game or something like that, but like, it is, I just think, not even Final Fantasy, that is a strong section of any video game. And 100%. Then all of a sudden things get really weird once you get out of Midgar,
right? And the idea, like, even going back to our conversation, trying to envision, what are they going to do? Like, how are they going to extend Midgar to 30 hours? How are they going to lay the groundwork for an expansive game that literally goes into outer space? Spoiler alert for Final Fantasy VII. It seemed like I could not comprehend the undertaking that would be required to make this game any good. And I gotta say, I'm genuinely shocked to say this, but I really like the Final Fantasy VII Remake.
Yes. Whatever. Like, I would be glad to hear your opinion one way or the other, but I was very interested in what you'd think, because I highly enjoyed this game.
Bonkers, dude. Like, the undertaking, and I was trying, and we'll talk about this when we get to the story as well, but I was trying to convey to Nicole the sheer undertaking. And I showed her some images of the original Final Fantasy VII and then this remake. And, you know, of course we've seen images before that graphically, it's night and day. It's night and like a wholly, totally different solar system, right? In terms of the graphical upgrade. I do want to stress that this game is absolutely gorgeous looking. I think that it looks better than The Last of Us 2, in my opinion. I think that it has some of the most stunning visuals, and to be able to evoke the world that we know from the original, but in this new light, felt like it was accomplishing something wholly different, right? It wasn't just, this is a game that is built to exploit nostalgia. There are times when I think it does feel like that, but generally speaking, this game is it's such this bizarre and unique experience that both hews very closely to the original enough to evoke some of the same feelings that you can expect, some of the same character arcs, but then also just is fully willing to go completely out of left field to surprise you. It is a game that fully embraces the meta narrative of this game existing as a remake and building upon the previous game. And to sort of comprehend the audacity of that and the audacity of saying, not only are we going to shift what this game is about and change the meta and change the game experience drastically from the original, we're going to do it and then say, oh, and also we're going to make like four more to actually finish this game. You know, it's like pointing your bat and saying like, I'm going to hit a home run. Exactly. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And then seemingly they're in the process of hitting that home run. And it is phenomenal to watch.
It is. Yeah. I mean, it's already, I would already say remaking Final Fantasy VII is a fool's errand. Just, I mean, just if you were to tell someone, hey, I'm going to remake Final Fantasy VII, it's like, okay, well, I'm going to go tilt at windmills. Yes. Have fun. You know, it's like
a beloved, expansive JRPG from well over a decade ago, many, many years ago.
Yeah. I mean, so you just have decades of fandom. You have a style of game that is so different from what is in vogue now. It is a fool's errand. Yep. And to not only do it justice, but also set something up that is, it just sets up a whole bunch of different directions that they could go with this thing by the end. It's pretty incredible. I am extremely impressed by what they were able to do.
So let me ask you this. At what point while you were playing, did you really realize, wow, like this is very different? Because for me, it really, I know that there are some scenes in the beginning of the game, I mean, besides look, right, that you know, okay, this is not the original Final Fantasy. Certainly the mechanics right off the bat are different. It's, you know, it's action gameplay. It's much, it's basically Final Fantasy 13 mechanics.
Yeah.
And even I think I stopped playing originally when I was just doing some of the small side quests in Sector 5. And I thought, well, you know, there's some weird stuff with these like spirit creatures that weren't really in the original game, but you know, so far this game could go either way. And I think for me, there was at some point when I was like, I think it was in combat because this game does something really joyful, which is allowing you to get into scenarios where your character is bound or trapped or stuck. Right. Yeah. And it's similar to the way that how frustrating it could be when you are silenced in Final Fantasy VII and your characters can't do anything, right? You've just fought a Marlboro or something and you are stuck. But being able to then quickly switch over to Tifa and just start fucking punching things in the face and punching them up in the air. And then Tifa uses her ultimate and, you know, this wind-up animation takes place when you're using her abilities and you shift back to Cloud and now you're Cloud again and you're like jumping in there and taking this battle differently. The speed of combat and the fluidity of jumping around between the characters and feeling like each of them were behaving in a way that makes sense for the types of action that you saw them do in previous games was just, to me, like unlocked that notion that the minute-to-minute gameplay is going to be a blast because I don't know where it's going. And when I get a new character, like, oh, when I get Aerith and we get all these people, I can do all these different things at the same time. And it's going to be so fun because it'll actually feel like I'm playing all of these characters individually and they all have their moments to shine. And it just felt like it really just cracked wide open right about when you are sort of exploring and then really leaving Sector 5.
I think the Sector 5 thing is a big tipping point because it's been some time since I finished the game now, but I think that's around the time where you get to spend time with multiple characters in your party, and so you really see how the battle system works versus in the early games. The difficulty curve of this game is interesting because it kind of eases you in for a while and then plateaus and then drastically increases in terms of what it expects out of you.
Yes.
And then plateaus for a while and then it's a stair step motion.
Yeah.
And at a certain point you do the stair step of you're now essentially going to have three characters in your party for the rest of the game, and the game then assumes that you are taking it seriously in terms of switching characters and being smart about how different abilities complement others and being smart about your materia loadouts and so forth.
Yeah.
And I think that's where the game kind of broke open for me, where I realized that, oh, I should be, you know, I should be like Tifa is like DPS, and I should be building her up immediately, popping the like enhancements on her fists or whatever, and then continuing. And I should switch to Barret when I'm trying to recharge so I can still do some damage at long distance. Like, it really just started to unlock there. And also I needed to get comfortable with, I need to use magic or use an ability, and then immediately switch to another character while the animation is happening to then go do some extra work, you know, like
peak efficiency feels good.
Like, you really do start to think about it. We're like, it's, and we talked about this a little bit when we had a check-in on it, but I really think that this style does a good job evoking the turn-based style of the original games with those ability points, but also it puts the action mode in where you are linking combos together, you're dodging, you can dynamically block, there's, you know, there's parrying depending on what sort of materia you set up. I mean, it's a really cool thing where the more you engage with the action, the more it unlocks the turn-based part, and then it just feeds on itself to, I don't know, it feels highly modern. And I might have even said this in our last chat about it, but this is a super high compliment, but this feels like a good platinum game.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, especially when you're just going all out in combat and you feel like you're on the ball. I do think the difficulty spike is kind of obnoxious in a couple of points. Specifically, there are moments when you will encounter enemies that are invulnerable to certain attacks, which is always the case in Final Fantasy. But I think in this game, because the action is so fast-paced, it can feel like you just kind of hit a wall, and it's more difficult to sort of read combat. What I will say is I did spend maybe a good, like, I don't know, a quarter of the time playing on easy mode, which was a... There's only three difficulties. There's easy mode, normal mode, and then turn-based mode. And I did try all of them. I do think that this game would benefit from having a mode... a difficulty between easy and normal, because there were times when what I wanted was a little bit of a breather. Just like old Final Fantasy games, there are moments when your healer dies and you are stuck in an endless cycle of Phoenix downs, desperately try to heal, die. Phoenix down, desperately trying to heal, die. And the combat's going to be very, very long, right?
Yes.
So, for example, the fight with the house... that takes place. iconic fight from the original Final Fantasy VII, one of the weirder ones. Super fun scene, by the way.
I think that's, but like, side note on that, like, that is a great example of how they were able to thread the needle for constant fan service, but also quality interactions.
Yep. Yeah.
Where it's just not fan service to have, oh, remember the house battle? That's funny. Like, but they made that random ass house encounter from the Final Fantasy VII original a major plot point slash boss battle for this one, and a set piece.
And it becomes this robot, and it kind of makes sense. Like, in a weird way, like, Corneo would have a magical robot house in his basement. You know, like, there's weird concepts that make sense. But anyway, like, that fight can be very, very long. And if you die at the end of the fight, it's very frustrating because you have to go through the whole rigmarole again.
Yes.
So there are times where, like that, I would hit a wall and I would turn down the difficulty. The difficulty that's turn-based will let your characters just continue to fight on their own accord. So they will block, they will attack, and you really are just waiting for the ATB gauges to activate for you to then choose their abilities. I actually think that, especially later in the game when you get the haste ability, a lot of your time is spent thinking about combat in a turn-based way, right?
Yep.
Oh, okay, you go into battle, you assess to find out their weakness. Yep. You know, I was using Tifa as probably the most mixed character. She would be dealing with buffing the party and then focused on combat. So, you know, a bit of both DPS versus all healing or all magic.
Yeah.
So, you know, I would cast Assess. I would cast Haste on my party. I would cast Regen on the party. Okay, back to Aerith. She needs to lay down the Arcane Ward so she can double her powers. So you're thinking a lot in those steps, right? Yep. I kind of wish that there was a level of difficulty above easy, but that was still turn-based, where you could do, all of the characters would do their main attacks, do their own blocks, but still let you sort of sit and just be within that sort of tactical space of figuring yeah. out how you want to, you know, stack your combat. But that's such a minor complaint. I think generally speaking, the game is pretty well balanced. When you hit a wall and you convert it to easy, you can do so on the fly and then continue through and then turn it back to normal. So there's really not like a yeah. crazy hard barrier to you. And the saves are relatively forgiving. But yeah, I mean, I enjoyed combat through and through. And by the end of it too, you know, when you have a bunch of weapons and you can spec out the weapons, which I actually mm-hmm. think works really well because yep. you can ensure it's not just in, you know, in the original Final Fantasy, you find a weapon that is clearly, you know, it's full of materia. This is a magic user weapon for Barret. This is a game where there are weapons that are like that, but then you can also spec within those trees. If you think, yep. I'm going to make Barret just a magic user, you can do that. Or you can say, I'm going to have this character be a mix. Or here's the weapon for Tifa that bumps buffs, but she also does so much combat that maybe I'll just, you know, risk reward, yeah. focus on her offensive abilities, and then yep. lean on my own sort of skill to deal with buff timings and stuff like that. So there is a lot of variety in terms of how you play those weapons. I would be concerned that some people wouldn't find all the weapons because a lot of them are kind of like hidden.
They are, yeah. And the abilities are cool. I mean, there's, even with Aerith, there are some abilities. What was that one? I think it was called Light of Judgment or something like that. Like it's, did you
I don't
ever
even know
use
if I
that
found
one?
That one. No.
So there is one
a staff?
That, it's a staff, but it gives you an ability where Aerith floats up in the air and then just shoots this beam of destruction out at enemies.
Oh, I want
enemies.
That one.
And it changes, it can completely change the way you play her because her limit break is like a free for all cure all for everyone. Yeah. But that weapon incentivizes you to turn her into an attack mage versus a healing mage.
Yeah.
And it's a super strong attack. And so you just have to think about, okay, well, if I do this, then I need to spread out my healing and yep. buff materia to the other people because, you know, that the Ray of Judgment or whatever it's called yep. takes two ATB, you know,
yeah.
Notches. So there's just a lot of strategy behind it. And there's a fair amount of, there's a fair amount of complexity and customization that you yeah. could do for it. I will also say that one thing that like I ran into was whenever I ran into battles where I would fail a few times in a row, once I got creative and used abilities that I didn't traditionally use or used magic that I didn't traditionally use, I usually found the solution. And so I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. Like it's not just like they're dumping HP into this character. This, you know, if I use Cloud's, you know, disorder attack versus braver, it's way better, you know?
Yes. Yeah.
I don't know. It's just the balance is very good.
I also really enjoy that the enemies will tend to aggro against whoever you're controlling at that yes. given time, which yeah. sometimes can feel a little outlandish because it'll just sort of laser beam on you out of nowhere. Yes. But what it does add, and this is weirdly satisfying, and I'm basing off of my experiences in a lot of MMOs, but is juggling aggro. Yes. It's kind of fun, you know?
Yep.
Having an enemy come charging at me and I go, well, fuck, I'm not going to get out of the way, but you know what I can do? Not get stuck in a falling animation. See ya, exactly. Aerith. And then I'm yeah. just over at Cloud now. You know, and
right.
and you can even know, oh, Aerith is about to get hit by a big ability. I'm going to switch to Tifa and start yeah. casting Cure now. Exactly. Moments before they even get hit. You know, it adds such this interesting variety to your minute-to-minute actions because you are constantly thinking at that strategic level, but also trying to execute at a base level, you know? I think one of the things that I found difficult in this game was learning that there are often times where you just need to stop spamming attack. You need to yes. be shielding,
yep.
or you need to be dodging, or you need to be waiting for an enemy animation to finish because yep. dodging won't help you.
Right.
And the combat, there's so many effects in combat that I think sometimes it can be distracting, but if you're willing to learn that lesson, then you find yourself being much more measured in
yes.
the way that you're fighting your enemies. And by being more measured, you're sort of unlocking how powerful using your ATB strategically is, you know?
Yeah.
And then you're yeah. really sort of showcasing how good an RPG can be.
I mean, it's kind of a weird compliment to even say, but it reminds you how strong a traditional JRPG can be when it when the systems are very well interlocked and very well designed, because you are thinking about it as a chess game versus just a straight up action game. And but then they go one step further and throw pretty solid action games thing. I remember the first time when I used Braver, I was like, okay, great, I'm going to use Braver. I know how Braver works. And then I totally whiffed.
Yeah, you too. Oh, man. Did you ever use Cloud's weapon that lets him do the, like, for Infinity's End, I think it's called?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Whiffing.
Where you're just, like, a million slashes, and if you miss, you're like, well.
Yeah, like, you miss, and then he does, like, a huge thing for, like, 3,000 damage, and right. Man, you whiff that on a boss, no less, especially when the boss is staggered or something.
Yeah.
It's just so embarrassing. You have to think that Barrett and crew are laughing at you.
I think overall, and we didn't even talk about, the way that they do summons in this game is pretty interesting. You know, that it basically becomes a playable character on the field for as long as the summon lasts, and that there's just a lot of different things. But I think we should have a conversation, especially since we just talked about Last of Us. We need to talk about length in video games.
Yes,
because I mean, not to pull a Jason Schreier heel turn move, but I mean, this game's too long.
It is too long.
And The Last of Us was too long, and a lot of games are just like, it's kind of weird, and I don't know.
I completely skipped all of the last side quests. I was just like, nah, I'm good.
Yeah, I mean, it's, and even when it's not a side quest, I mean, we don't need all those driving sequences. We just don't. You know, they don't add
mini games, Scott. Don't you remember those fun mini games?
It's crazy. They really did pick all of the things from Final Fantasy and try to modernize them as best they could. And
yeah,
the driving sequences are just you just don't need them. And even when you do have them, they go on for 50% too long.
Yeah,
and
dude,
it's just kind of a crazy thing where I don't know where this trend is coming from. I don't know if I'm responsible because my life is just more. It's less conducive to a long game, or if there is just something inherent that people are doing here, but
yeah.
It doesn't, this game doesn't benefit from the padding that it has. Even though I really enjoy the game and I enjoy the moment to moment mechanics, there are whole sections of this game where I was thinking to myself, oh, you could just totally delete this scene and it'd be fine.
Yep. Do you think that some of it though is their way of adding value after revealing that they're breaking this game up? Like, do you want to hear, hey, we're breaking Final Fantasy VII into 3 or 4 $60 titles.
Yeah.
Here's a 25-hour game or a 20-hour game, you know?
Right.
I think that certainly some of the side quests, I imagine, but I do think that there are elements where they feel like they felt obligated to put that in. And we're like, well, or conversely, maybe they said, you know, how are we going to break this game up? Once we decide how we're going to break it up, how do we justify that? And if we can justify that by taking something from the original and making it better and more modern now, then two birds and one stone is their perspective, you know? I'm very curious how they'll do after Midgar, just like we were before we even played this game, right?
Yeah.
Because I think there's even more traff after Midgar, you know? Yeah. And adding all of that in just because it was in the originals could just continue this trend of it being egregiously long. I do think that the rest of the games will also feel too long.
I mean, it just seems like the trend, and it's a weird thing because, so get this, I did every side quest.
Oh my god, dude, you found all the cats.
I found all the cats. I did the arena battles. Because I loved this game. I mean, I loved playing the game, but there was so much of it that at a certain point, I mean, it was, you know, it's like eating too much ice cream or something. It's like, man, I can't do this, you know?
Oh God, I'm going to barf. There's too much Rocky Road.
But yeah. I mean, the game is just, I mean, for me, it was such a fun experience to play moment to moment when I was in the mechanic. And also I just, you know, every time I, you know, explored a new part of the town or, you know, chose a new path, to your point, I mean, the world is extremely well realized, and I wanted to see everything they did. But because from here on out, the story as was told in Final Fantasy VII only gets bigger, and they're going to have to make even more choices about what they, I mean, there was entire sections that, you know, the whole, there was entire sections where they just didn't have them in the original Final Fantasy, yeah. You know, all of the sequences in between the towns, you know, going through the ruined freeway and all of yeah. the sewer stuff. And like all of that stuff was the just underground not in lab. That.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, some of the added stuff is great, though, right? Like the stuff with Jesse, where you're spending more time with that whole crew, yes. I thought was really great and a brilliant idea to sort of add a lot of flavor to the world, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, if anything, so many that's what I want. One-dimensional characters become actual characters in the story.
Right.
You know?
I mean, that's my hope, right? Is cut the chaff, cut the mini yeah. games, and instead focus on making these characters just better realized. You know, my biggest worry is the Cid character.
I was just going to say, you know, you're just angling for them to cut Cid.
I lobbied for it beforehand. Like, fuck Cid. I think he's an uninteresting character. I stand by that. I stand by that statement from the original Final Fantasy VII. I cannot imagine them doing Cid right. And I'm ready to eat crow, but like, you know, maybe what they need is a full rewrite. You know, like yeah. if you cut the chaff and you say, you know what, instead of adding a bunch of dumb side missions that don't make any sense. So you don't need to, we don't need players to defend the enormous chicken egg, right? Instead, let's make Cid a more well-rounded character and
right.
and give his story arc and give some of those side characters more background so we know who he is. Yeah. Then maybe I would be a bit more satisfied with that. And I believe that they very well could do that, you know, based upon the way that Jesse is way better realized and is yeah. far more likable of a character. I mean, Wedge is still the classic Japanese let's make fun of fat people.
I mean, this game is anime as fuck. Let's not get it twisted.
It's extremely anime.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. When you decide what Tifa is going to wear to Corneo's mansion, I think it's like really the moment that seals the deal. But I do think that narratively speaking, they do take a lot of big risks with the way that they play with these characters, and not yeah. just to, you know, give us a happy ending, because I don't necessarily think they're going to go that route, although I'd be interested if they did. Yeah. But because they, I think that they realize the shortcomings of some of those characters, right? Like, how do you feel, again, spoiler for the original Final Fantasy VII, but how do you feel for characters who die so early in the game and have very yes. few lines? You know,
right.
Wedge has this line in Final Fantasy VII where he says, what is it? Something like, I hope I made a difference.
Yes.
And that exact same line is used in Final Fantasy VII Remake.
Yeah.
But when he says it in Final Fantasy VII Remake, I'm like genuinely moved, you
yes.
know? Because yeah. I know that like this group of people have a background, you know? Like they're not mm-hmm. just there because they are you know, they are disposable red shirts, right?
Right.
They are there
yes.
because they care about the town and the community, you know, like the idea that and Wedge plays a different role when all of this happens, but mm-hmm. I think the role that he played is a good one. It's a fitting one, you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah, I mean, before we get into spoilers, I will say just I think this game also walks a pretty interesting line with the material. I mean, I made the joke about anime, but it's true. I mean, this game is fundamentally kind of corny. But
the big thumbs up, give it away, right?
Yeah. But there are, at the same time, I think the performances are very strong for the most part.
Yes.
Especially, and I think they actually did a good job with Aerith and Tifa, because
yes.
even in the original one, there was this point where it could have been a classic like catfight love triangle thing.
Yeah.
And the first game was actually kind of crazily progressive, where like they didn't have that, where Tifa and Aerith became friends, and
yep.
to Cloud's exclusion sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think,
I mean,
they
that's my slash fic. Like, that's way better canon.
I mean, I think they did a great job fleshing that out in this game, where because they spend more time with the characters, even the main characters, you get to see the relationships develop between all of them and how they interact with each other. And I think the actors also do a good job, because the actors have to deal some pretty wild lines in terms of, you know, what they're
yeah.
describing and the life force of the world and all of that stuff. And
Mother
and
Gaia.
And even Cloud, yeah, who's just this emo kid, actually, I think that actor does a pretty good job delivering what 100%. Are some pretty challenging lines to deliver with a straight face.
And honestly, this game is a absolute testament to how strong voice acting can really change the reading, yes, of a game. You know, there, yeah, are lines that are hokey bad lines from the original Final Fantasy VII where my interpretation as they read them playing, yeah, the original game was Cloud was an asshole, right?
Yes.
And, yeah, in this one, he's still an asshole sometimes, but, yeah, he's also much more self-aware, right? Like, he, yes, he's being facetious or he's being coy because he wants to present himself in a certain way, but he, yeah, really does care. There's no doubt in my mind that he's a part of this crew and cares about this crew way earlier than I get that feeling in the original, yeah, Final Fantasy VII. Yeah. And a lot of that is because his voice acting is just that much stronger and you could lean on it, you know?
Yep.
In a weird way, two things are true for me as well. One is, I think that Barrett's voice acting is some of the weakest.
Yes.
And also, Barrett is still the best character in Final Fantasy VII. Yes. And I would ride or die for that man.
I mean, it's tough because, and again, this goes back to a history of problematic portrayals of people of color, especially, yes, black characters in anime. But he's kind of a caricature of a tough guy and, even more specifically, a black tough guy, especially when it comes to portrayals in anime. And it's unfortunate because they don't give him a lot of nuance to work with, especially in the lines and how they were read and just how they're set up. But I think the story, his background, and I hope they go into it in the next games, because they only scratch the surface of how he became the way he is and how Marlene, yeah, came into his life and all of that stuff. So, and it's funny because the way that they made him such a weird, over the top, almost comedic relief, tough guy, they can play it for laughs when Barrett is like, "Oh yeah, planetology. You mean you never heard of it?" It's like, yeah, it's even funnier when he starts to talk about that, because he doesn't come across as the guy who's going to understand the kind of mystical science of planetology, but, right, and yet here he is, your guide to planetology.
Yeah, yeah. But his righteous anger in the game still feels just as fresh as it felt in the original, which I think is super satisfying.
And they include, I mean, I'm shocked by how many lines I remembered from the original,
yeah,
one.
Yeah.
They include a huge amount of them, even from the Turks and all of those guys. Like, they include almost all of the lines that you remember from Final Fantasy in the context that make them meaningful to the, to, yeah, the larger plot. And even they had some new ones. I remember Barrett was in the very beginning, he said something like, you know, don't let them make you think, or don't let them cast doubt, or, you know, don't doubt yourself because of what they say. Like, they're the ones that are wrong, you know, like, yes, kind of like justifying. And you're like,
fuck yeah, Barrett.
Yeah. It's very interesting what they were able to do. And even under the somewhat like problematic way that they were trying to accomplish it.
Yeah.
And I hope that they continue to build on it, because his character actually gets more nuanced as the game goes on, which,
yeah,
will be rewarding to see if they pay it off.
Who do you think is cuter, the baby from The Last of Us 2 or Marlene from Final Fantasy VII Remake?
There was some, I mean, it also, I think this is just, you become a softie after you become a parent, but like, there was some, I mean.
Oh, I've always been like a softie.
Well, it's also just like, when a child is in danger, it's also extremely difficult. Like when Aerith was, you know, saving her, and it's, yeah, it's just tough. And like, knowing that Aerith was about that age when, what's Aerith's mom's name? I forgot.
Elmire?
Elmira is her Elmira? Adopted mother, right? But like, Ivana or someone like,
oh,
that.
Oh, I see.
Her.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I mean, there's some pretty tough stuff. I mean, but I think they do a good job, even with the child actor, yeah, in this game. And it's tough to have kids act even under the best of circumstances, let alone, you know, voice, totally, acting. Yeah.
I mean, this, the sequence with Aerith, this is, it's a minor story element, but the sequence with Aerith sort of having a flashback about being picked on.
Yes.
It was like another moment that felt, yeah, like it added so much story elements to her and made, yep, me really feel for her. And in fact, it, you know, by the time I was done with this game, I was like, man, I'm going to be so sad when inevitably she gets killed, you know?
Yes.
And because this character is better realized the actress's performance is very, very strong. And I was just like getting emotional because she's part of my team. And I'm like, oh my God, I know where all of this is going. Or do I, you know?
I mean, maybe that's where we just call it now and say we're going to go into story spoilers.
Yes. Spoiler time for Final Fantasy VII, the remake.
Well, so where should we start? I mean, do we start at the most kind of impactful thing that could happen with this game, or do we talk about some of the differences leading up to that big moment?
I mean, I think we touched on some of the small ones, right, already. Yeah. I think the adding Jesse's character stuff, I think, was really, really strong.
Turning Avalanche into an actual group of people versus just some slogan that you see was a pretty impressive feat in my mind.
I go back and forth on one of the other elements that, I don't know, maybe this is arguably a big change, but Shinra's really the big bad right off the bat. Mm-hmm. Or rather, not the big bad, but they're very clearly evil, right? The underground lab sequence where they're experimenting on all kinds of creatures and stuff does not exist in the original Final Fantasy VII, as far as I remember.
Right.
And I don't know, I go back and forth because specifically I go back and forth around the change that they made where it's very clear that Shinra is the one that destroys, that does the bombing. Because there's a moment in the original Final Fantasy VII where the crew really has to grasp, did we do the right thing or did we do the wrong thing? And I think, you know, and Barrett places blame back on Shinra, but he's not just placing it on Shinra from the perspective of they actually did it. Although I think that there's undertones in the original game that that's the case too. But he places it back on Shinra because they're the source of all of this conflict to begin with, which I think is a very powerful statement. I do think that concept is undermined by making Shinra a more malevolent force from the very beginning. Although, again, you know, at this point we know Shinra's evil, so why fucking hide it, you know?
Yeah. And they attempt, but I don't think they fully succeed in exploring the topside life and the negative aspects of the topside life as well. Where even whether you're a salary man working in Shinra, being exploited in a more subtle, less violent, but still ultimately exploitative way, or whether you're Jesse's dad who lives a topside life but got exposed in one of the reactors and is now basically disabled for his, you know, he's in a coma or what have you. So I think they try to, posit that some people are just caught up in the machine. And I think they do more of that than they did in the first game, but it comes at the cost of making Shinra way more mustache twirly from the jump.
Yeah, for sure. Especially Heidegger's voice actor. That dude is just like gruff and angry the whole time.
Well, when you look at Heidegger, I was just kind of wondering. I wonder how they're going to portray this guy. I wonder how they're going to portray Professor Gast. Like all of the, because all of these people are just highly over the top anime villains, and they basically just go for it.
Yep. Yeah, totally, man. And and I'm okay with that. You know, I'm here for it. There are moments that are so surprising because of like the anime-ness. You know, when Kate Sith makes an appearance, like
in one scene.
But I love that scene, right? Because in the original game, we don't know who this person is, you know? And you and I now know that it's some stooge at Shinra who's like operating like a Muppet or whatever the fuck, you know?
I think they're going to set him up as Reeve. He might have even been Reeve in the first game,
Ooh, interesting. Yeah, I don't recall if he was Reeve or not.
I think he was, but even so, like, it's pretty clear that, makes sense. Reeve is going to be him,
I like that idea quite a bit, to see Kate Sith run out and be shocked at, like, because the disaster of dropping a plate on poor people is so fucked. Like, it's so, and it's so relevant then, it's relevant now. Like, that concept of sacrificing people's life for an economic good is one in which we experience on the daily, you know?
Yes. Yeah.
And it's awesome to see people show this just emotional outrage. And Kate Sith is such a comical character. It's like a cat person. But when Kate Sith runs out and sort of collapses on his knees in that one brief moment, it made me feel very, very good, because a piece of me is nostalgic to the, even replaying it, not liking it, is nostalgic to that era of originally playing it. And then also so satisfied at the idea that they're taking these characters that I think, kind of sidetracked and adding them and showing this like emotional response to the world that they built that I think that they needed to do from the start.
I think what I just kind of, I mean, I didn't, it wasn't because I was mocking it, but I just kind of laughed when I saw that, because that was the moment where it fully locked in, where I thought to myself, man, these people that made the game are fucking serious about what they're doing, because yes. if they weren't, they would have cut this character because it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
They would have cut Red 13.
This
they
is
would
why Sid is going to be in the stuff. Game. Vincent's going to be in the game.
I mean, honestly, like they seem so deadly serious about telling this story and earnestly justifying every single one of these absurd characters that I can't help but admire just the sheer audacity of what they're doing.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they don't even set it up. If you never played the original Final Fantasy and you saw that scene, that's just a random ass cat pounding the ground in rage.
Yeah, wearing a throne. Wearing a crown, excuse me. Yes. Wearing a crown, yeah. Yeah, it is bonkers. I mean, Corneo, like the weird cowboy chocobo person, you know?
Tifa is just in a cowboy outfit in her flashbacks when her father dies, like all of that stuff.
Yeah, for sure. Man, bizarre. And then speaking of flashbacks, you know, it is buck wild to me that Sephiroth is just out of the gate. Here he is, you know?
Yes.
I think the first scene, but one of the ones that for me was really impactful was the flashback to Zack. And I was like, what the fuck? Like, right. You're really bringing Zack into the mix now?
Right.
Because you're teasing these elements that are coming out much later in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that Yoshi Norikatase or whatever, the guy who wrote the original and directed the original Final Fantasy VII, I think in an interview was talking about how everybody knows who Sephiroth is at this point, right? He's such an iconic figure in gaming, and you know, even if you didn't play the original, you kind of know who Sephiroth is. That there's no real reason to hide that he's the main villain, that he's a major threat in the world of Final Fantasy VII, and that liberated them to weave him into this first Final Fantasy VII remake. And I think that idea of the team saying, let's take the things that we know people already know, right? And see that as a liberation and not a handcuff, I think is exactly why this game, from a story perspective, is so good and interesting as it is. Because the elements that are added, like the weird Destiny spirits, you know, the fight sequences when you were fighting Destiny and they're flashing to all of these moments that we recognize from the game that they did not need to produce. You know, you did not need to make a Meteor CGI for 6 years because that's when that sequence is actually going to happen, you know? But they did it anyway because they just want to be like, look, we know, right?
Yeah.
So now that you know that, what could we possibly do to bring you something different? And by the time you get to these last moments where the story really goes into, you know, off the rails and into left field, it feels like it's exciting to me, right? Because it's something that I never would have expected. You know, I really thought they were just going to sort of feed the nostalgia and go down the list and do all these check boxes. But I think by showing some of the moments that we're nostalgic for and then just straight up changing them or making you question whether or not that is malleable within the very story means that they might thread that needle. You know, they might walk that line where the game is both at once nostalgic, but on the other hand, a fundamental narrative departure from the game that we just played, you know, not so long ago.
I mean, I think that's the thing where they pay off those spirits, you know, they pay off fate in a way that I just didn't think that they were going to be able to do, because I didn't think they'd have, honestly, I just didn't think they'd have the guts to do it.
Yeah, and so, I had no idea what they were for like 90% of the game.
I mean, I think that's probably more of a criticism than anything, because they're just not telling you what this thing is. And And all of the characters
but
are like,
don't you think that's why, though? Like, they want you to be surprised, right?
I mean, they clearly succeed, but I then start to look back on it as, I mean, whatever. We should just, I guess, we flash forward. Well, before we even do, I think the Jesse stuff, the Avalanche stuff is strong because it talks about what else is going on in this world in a way that the first game didn't. I don't know if the first game referenced this, but like in Remake, Barret's cell of Avalanche is a more kind of splintered off cell than the main one.
Yeah.
So they're like the underdogs of the underdogs, and you know, this is a group of people that are trying to get by on their own kind of ethos, even within the rebellion that they're in, and just kind of what happens in the slums and what life looks like and how people interact, I think, is very well realized, and it just makes it fleshes out the world in a way that I always just kind of imagined it, and now somehow they were able to realize it.
Yeah.
I think the Turks are pretty strong, and I think they go into that more, where it's like the Turks kind of know what they're doing is wrong, and they go into that even further.
Yes, yeah. They're also just fun, like in terms of animeness. The Turks is like peak anime, you know. Yeah. Like Reno, what a character that guy
pulls
is.
Out another pair of sunglasses.
Yeah, it's so funny, dude. Like I love the Turks quite a bit. Also, like the music around the music in the game, period, just fucking slaps. I think there's a Chocobo track that is also like laid down with some fat beats that is very satisfying.
There's a dubstep there's multiple Chocobo theme remixes. There's a ska one, there's a dubstep one, there's like the one that I like a lot is there is a kind of upbeat remix of one of the original songs when you're going through the freeway.
Oh yeah,
I don't know if you remember that one, where like it's the one that every once in a while the beat stops and it's like don't give up, and then it like goes back into it. The music's just extremely strong, especially since they lean a lot on the legacy stuff.
But that is a sense of fun that you see in some of those earlier parts that I don't recall seeing in Midgar, right? Even Wall Market, right? Mm-hmm. The underground fight thing, the way that it's so bombastic, and they have this like big light show, and you know your enemy comes out, and it's like here's a guy, also three dogs, you know. Yeah. It's really silly and fun, and feels like you're. It feels a lot, or of course, how could I forget the amazing dance sequence that you do in Wall Market, right? This feels more like a Yakuza game at times that embraces that the hilarity and inaneness of it. And I think leaning into that, especially for the minigames, is absolutely the right call. You know, just be unabashedly Japanese at times, because it brings a lot of joviality to the game that you miss when your story is, one, set in Midgar, and two, about like the corporate destruction of the world.
Yes, yeah, and the subcultures that spring up under those circumstances.
Right.
And they just kind of go fully into it, yeah. Okay, is there anything else besides the big thing? What else did we miss? Corneo, pretty strong, all of that stuff.
Yeah.
And there's that whole separate character, you know, whose wife was taken by Corneo, like that's... That entire character didn't exist.
Yeah, that's weird.
Roach?
Roach.
What?
Well, I don't know what his deal is. Yeah. I think that is the first minigame, right? The motorcycle sequence?
Yeah, when you're fighting him. Basically, when he and Cloud have a motorcycle duel.
Yeah, ludicrous. I love that stuff.
And the fact that you don't ever tie things off with him means that he's going to come back in the next game.
Yeah, he's definitely coming back. And I hope he exclusively comes back in motorcycle combat sequences.
And it's like, there are some things when he's using his motorcycle as a weapon where, like, the motorcycle doesn't fit in this arena, but he still makes it so where, you know, he's basically using his motorcycle as a sword. It's a crazy thing.
All the Hojo stuff I thought was strong. Oh, I mean, getting Red 13 filled me with so much joy, because that's one character that I do love and desperately wanted to see again.
Well, and they do something right away where, you know, Aerith kind of immediately has a bond because, you know, she's part of the Ancients and he is, you know, a much older, you know, race on the planet. Mm-hmm. But they even make oblique reference to the fact that he is essentially a kid.
Yep.
Which I thought was strong. I hope we get to play as him next time around.
I assume we will. I think that they probably just didn't want to put in all the work of making him a playable character with items and weapons.
Yeah,
I mean,
they'd have to rebalance all that stuff. Yeah, the Hojo stuff, very strong. And they do more about Aerith's birth mother and you know their experience, you know, as kind of the last two, or the last two known ones anyway. Okay, here's my theory. I think the Fates are kind of a sideways critique of the fandom around Final Fantasy VII.
Ooh, interesting, okay. So, okay, why is that, though? Do you think that the Fates are like, you gotta make Final Fantasy VII again, just don't change anything, make it pretty? And they're like,
basically, because like the role of the Fates are, things have to happen in a certain way. We're gonna make things happen in a certain way if you ever deviate too far. You can deviate a little bit here and there, but we're gonna make sure that you stay on basically the same events to the point of, we're going to bring people back to life. We're going to prevent Barrett. You from entering rooms, you know, like all of that stuff.
Yeah.
And at the end, you're literally fighting against the legacy of Final Fantasy VII because you're seeing all of those flashbacks to when Aerith dies, when Sephiroth calls Meteor, when you have, you know, the destruction of Midgar, all of that stuff. And by destroying the Fates, you then, Zack survives at the end of this game.
Yeah, man.
And so then it's like, well, who the fuck knows what's going to happen in this game now? They basically just wrote themselves a ticket to do anything with the next game.
Yes, and I loved that, man. Like, so much of this, of the reason I like the story in the first place, and so much of the reason I like Barrett in the first place, right, is you have this group of people, and, you know, I think there's even a line at the very end of the original Final Fantasy VII where they talk about the odds of them surviving or accomplishing this is slim to none, but... Yeah. If they're going to die, they want to go, they want to die fighting, right?
Yeah.
And there's this certain, like, audacious challenge of doom that is the main through line of this entire game. And I think when it comes to a major theme in both the original and the remake, which is environmentalism and corporate control, right? These things that are just emotionally taxing and feels like it's impossible to make change in the world at a grand scale.
Yep.
I think that story itself is that is what I find so moving and so interesting about that world and those characters, right?
Yep.
To then say, let's extrapolate that into the narrative itself, right? We know that, you know, at the end of Final Fantasy VII, I mean, I guess excluding like weird Advent Rising stuff, right?
Right.
We know the arc of Final Fantasy VII. We know Aerith is going to die. We know that Cloud has these weird fucked up issues with Zack and who he really is. We know that Meteor comes and the world is like fundamentally broken and changed. And, you know, we see Red's flashback into the future in the remake as well. Yep. The idea that you can resist even that is just so true to those themes, you know?
Yep.
And I think it makes me so excited because if they are willing to really go that way, you know, like if they go so far as saying, we're going to fucking say Aerith isn't going to die, you know, or we're going to bring her back, or we're going to stop Meteor from ever happening to begin with. You know, if the ending of the entire series is drastically different from the original, and I hope they're willing to do that, I think you would have this really excellent sort of alternate universe that nevertheless is still hammering home really effectively and using the meta narrative, the exact same themes that the original game is about.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, I always struggle with how much attribution can you give? Because if you look at this game from like a strategic perspective of telling a story, you have this impossible task of telling the story that people have built up so much as a part of their core identity in some areas. And how do you both serve that, but also don't do something completely boring and uninspired from uninspiring as a creative or as a storyteller? And they're able to, in my mind, prove that they understand what made Final Fantasy VII special to people, while at the same time saying, we understand fully what made this special to you, and now we're going to take you in a different direction. But trust us, because look, we're going to prove our... We're going to prove ourselves. We're going to take an entire 30, 40 plus hour game just to prove that we're legit. And now we're going to go on a journey. And like, that's just such a crazy thing to do.
Yeah.
You know,
it's bonkers, dude. I mean, again, I was telling Nicole when the credits were rolling, I was like, this is fucking wild. You know, Biggs is alive. Jesse's probably alive. Fucking Wedge is probably alive. Zach's alive. Like, it's so hard to understate how much my mind was blown, because I just, you know, part of it is we're so used to upgrades and remakes and just, it's rare to find a game that is genuinely surprising, you know?
Yes.
Especially when you're working from old material. We see it in television shows as well, right? Like countless remakes and movies that have covering the same ground, and the differences that they make are sometimes so far off base that it feels like you never really watched the original, did you? You know?
Yes.
Or you didn't get what people liked about it. And I think that your point is spot on, where it feels like they understand what people liked about it, but they also want to offer something different, potentially significantly different. And it's just very exciting. And I will say, even if the next two Final Fantasy VII remakes or the next one, whatever, even if they're god-awful, I think the endeavor that was this particular version is pretty phenomenal and just so interesting to play this year in particular.
I just, it's...
So if you had to bet, like, how wild do you think they're going to go?
I don't know.
Because there's there's still a part of me that's like, they could bungle it. You know, it could just be the same shit all over again. And at the end of every game, they fight Fate, but you can't fight Fate. It's inevitable. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of ways I could see this going where it feels like it's more nostalgia driven and less focused about that changed narrative. Because I do think that there is a limit. You know, those fanboys were defeated in the game, but they're not defeated in real life. You know, there's only so much we can do, you know?
Fate will come back. It's going to be one of those things where you have to constantly fight against it, or maybe they'll set it up where you will. I mean, one way they could go with it is, it seems pretty clear to me anyway that you will play as Zack at some point.
Yeah.
And I wonder if they will do a thing where the various timelines start to fight with themselves, and how like do you reconcile
cross universe combat?
I mean, basically, because what they essentially did at the end of this game is set up a multiverse where, you know, Zack survives and, you know, Shinra is a little bit different and, you know, the whole setup is different. And so one potential theme I could see is how, and I think this goes further into the meta narrative that they're talking about, which is, how do you deal with multiple truths that are also in conflict with each other?
Yeah.
And I think that's one of those things, because we're going to have to deal with that at a certain point in time, where we're going to have to say, okay, Final Fantasy VII is a game, but it's actually two games, both with pretty distinct stories. And so how do we reconcile those two things, where we have two games called Final Fantasy VII? They are very similar in many, many respects, but then they're widely different in others. And how do we... Who what are wins? We going to call canon? You know, what are we going to say? What is it, the canonical version?
I mean, my hope would, I mean, man, you know, like if I could go really off the wall, OG bad polygon Cloud would appear in this game, fully human sized, and fight alongside the graphically rich modern Cloud.
I mean, you're going to laugh, but I mean, that is something they did in Metal Gear Solid 4.
There you go.
I mean, like there were certainly more than one, you know, shades of Kojima in this game in terms of, I wonder what they're going to do here, because, you know, there's some stuff that they really could start to get into when it comes to, you know, multiverses and how all this stuff could work.
My big question is, when are they going to do it? Because this game clearly took some time and effort.
Yeah.
And honestly, even if they were working on all of the other parts while this one was in action, I still cannot imagine the next Final Fantasy coming out. There's no way it's coming out 2021, right? No way.
No, they would have had to say something already. I mean,
2 years at the minimum, like fall 2022.
Yeah, it's hard to know. The nice thing is, when I was kind of reading about it post game, this game seemed to do very well. And which means that, okay, great. You know, there's at least economic justification. Yeah, exactly. Like you can, and I think it was also, I think this game surprised everyone. It surprised everyone by how well it reviewed, by how well it sold. And now hopefully that gives them the runway to continue on whatever vision is. I mean, there's some whiteboard somewhere where someone has this sketched out, you know, and I would just love to see it.
Sephiroth? Question mark? Yeah.
I mean, I knew the game, that last battle against Sephiroth, where you fight him in the one-winged angel form.
Oh, love it.
And it's like, wait, what? They're burning one-winged angel in this game?
Yeah.
This was something that took 60 plus hours to do in the original game, and they're burning it now?
Yeah.
I have no clue where this game is going.
What are you
going
to keep in your back pocket? A bigger wing?
The other wing?
Oh my god. Yeah, by Final Fantasy VII Episode 4, he's got like 12 wings. Look, we ran out of ideas. We're going to be honest, team.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely so far the biggest and most pleasant surprise of the year, and they more than sold me on whatever they do next. And yep, it's not only because the game as a rule set was great, but the willingness to take risks in the story was something that you just don't see that in AAA games, and you especially don't see it in a game with this legacy, which makes even the stupid title of this game, which is Final Fantasy VII Remake, make more sense in retrospect.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they're remaking the whole thing, including the plot.
I mean, I'm surprised they didn't do like a dot hack thing where it was like /remake, right? You know?
And yeah, I mean, it's they now will have this other timeline of Final Fantasy to do with whatever they want. Yeah, it's fascinating.
What, out of curiosity, one last thing. What do you think that they're going to do mechanically speaking? Like, do I start with the Buster Sword again and work my way up from there? Can I load a save? I mean, this is going to be PS5 tech, you know?
That is true. I mean, that maybe that lends credence to the fact that this has to be a multiverse where you can justify having characters that are starting over, you know?
I mean, what if you just play as other characters for large swaths of the game, and then you get the new characters with all their shit unlocked, you know?
I mean,
play as Red's dad for 3 hours. Go for it, you know?
Maybe this is how they're going to introduce Cid.
Yeah, exactly. The first 10 hours. He's the main
character.
All right, on second thought, not that interesting.
Second thought, 0 out of 10. Hate it.
0 out of 10. Oh, my gosh.
I could see that. I mean, like, what if they... I mean, because we live in a post-Avengers world, right? Where what if there's 2 to 3 more games of the different sets of characters, where there's one game that is focused mainly on Kate Sith and Gold Saucer and a bunch of other places, and there's another game that is Cid and Vincent and a bunch of other ones, and then all of a sudden they wrap it up in a 4th or 5th game where everyone comes together.
You know? I mean, how do you make Vincent? He's a literal vampire. I don't understand. Like, he comes out of a coffin. How are you going to do that?
I mean, after this, I think that's why I was so impressed with this game, where I was like, wow, they accepted the challenge and met it. And so now it's like, yep, go for it. Take a swing at Vincent. I believe in you. You know, go for it.
Man, I am thrilled.
Yeah. Well, highly fun to have such a bright spot halfway through the year. This is extremely fun.
Yeah, especially because I think it's been a slow year for games. Like, there's not been a ton, and there's been delays and whatnot. But yeah, I mean, this is probably my favorite game I've played so far this year. So that's very exciting.
Yeah. Okay, I guess we will leave it there for now. Check back in 4 years when we play Final Fantasy Remake Part 2. experiencepoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And experiencepoints.net is the website. You can also find all of our podcasts, including the original Final Fantasy VII debrief, multi-part episode, wherever you find podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, you know all the sites.
All right, everyone. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you next week.
Ciao.